settlement. I must be magnanimous. Deals should be sooner rather than later. Just when it seemed that Ovitz's plight couldn't get worse, Martin Scorsese's first film under his new Ovitz-brokered deal with Disney blew up into a cause célèbre. Just after Thanksgiving, the Chinese government issued a brief statement warning that Scorsese's forthcoming film, Kundun, about the early years of the Dalai Lama and his flight from Tibet, jeopardized Disney's business in China. Disney hastily issued a terse statement that it would proceed with the film, a stand that earned Eisner plaudits in Hollywood for standing up for freedom of expression. In fact, Eisner was furious. He couldn't have cared less about striking a blow against Tibetan Buddhist oppression. He'd always thought the script for Kundun, written by Melissa Matheson, then Harrison Ford's wife, was boring, and he'd only agreed to make the $30 million film because Ovitz assured him the Chinese didn't care, and because Ovitz was so eager to get a prestigious director like Scorsese to Disney. Universal had passed on the project, and Disney had paid Universal $10 million when it acquired Kundun and another project in development there. When Eisner confronted Ovitz with this debacle, Ovitz protested that he had told the Chinese about Kundun and that none of the top officials objected. He pointed out that there were at least two other films about Tibet in production, including 7 Years in Tibet, starring Brad Pitt. Both more overtly anti-Chinese than the Scorsese film. The Chinese protest had come from some lower-ranking bureaucrat outside Ovitz's circle of influence and wouldn't amount to much. By now, Ovitz realized that nothing he said would have any effect. Eisner felt it was just the latest example of how everything Ovitz touched turned into a problem for him. He was especially angry because he had clearly delegated responsibility for international operations to Ovitz. China and Japan were supposed to be Ovitz's strong suits. Ovitz had high-level contacts in the secretive Chinese leadership, and he traveled to China to negotiate an expansion of Disney's business there, pressing such issues as copyright protection and the possibility of a theme park in Hong Kong. And now this. Eisner had to hire former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger to try to mend fences by assuring the Chinese that Disney wouldn't promote the film aggressively and that it would be a box office failure. "It will die a quiet death," Eisner assured the Chinese. For Eisner, Kundun was the last straw. Encouraged by Wilson's cell phone reports that Ovitz was finally facing up to reality and was willing to discuss a settlement, Eisner summoned Ovitz to his office the following week and told him that they had to negotiate a settlement of his contract. Ovitz seemed to agree. He said nothing further about chaining himself to his desk. Eisner reported in a letter to Irwin Russell, "I met with Michael Ovitz today, who wants to bring our discussion to a conclusion this week. Wants you and Bob Goldman, Ovitz's financial advisor, to settle out his contract immediately and sign it by week's end." Despite Eisner's interpretation of the meeting, Ovitz had still not accepted the fact that he was being fired. Although he was deeply depressed and overwrought, he still clung to the notion that if he could hang on until Christmas, he'd turn things around, even as he authorized Goldman and his lawyers to begin negotiations on his behalf. Though Eisner kept various board members informed of these developments,